brother Steve, who had been through seminary. And he said, you know, because I wanted to talk about, I said, look at how Matthew is using these proof texts. This is completely consistent with the Midrash, and it makes no literal sense outside of the Midrash. And we look, and we do that all over the New Testament, say, look at how the apostles are using the scriptures when they cite a scripture, when they quote it. They rip it out of its original context, out of its literal context, and they just use it as the rabbis do when they're writing Midrash. And sometimes they, with the same interpretations on the same passages. My brother would laugh about this because he'd say, you should go to a seminary library sometime and just see how many dissertations have been written on trying to prove that the apostles use a straight, literal, historical, grammatical hermeneutic, and all these like gymnastics that scholars will try to do to try to make it sound like, no, Matthew actually isn't taking that out of context. That's really what it means. But because, you know, we're not familiar with this stuff, you know, we didn't understand that. And anyway, it raises a problem for us, especially for us. This raises a problem because it's like, wait a second, the Bible is the Bible. And the traditions are the traditions. You know, it's like, and so you hear about the rock that followed them in the wilderness. Let's just say that it wasn't in Corinthians, that I didn't see it in Corinthians. And I said to you, did that really happen? Of course you would say, of course not. The rock did not really happen, or it didn't follow them. Well, now that it's in Corinthians, you're a little bit harder pressed to say whether it happened or not. But really, it's no different. It shouldn't be any different. Midrash is not supposed to be literally, literally true. I mean, maybe it is. Maybe some of it is. Who knows? But that's really not the intention of Midrash. Okay, now I studied Midrash for several years with Chabad Lubavitch in St. Paul. Those guys are fundamentalists. To them, it's literally, literally true. And if you pointed out a contradiction in the Midrash, they'd say, oh, there's 70 facets of Torah, you know? It's all right. You can have this and you can have that. No problem. But if you said, I don't think that rock followed them, no. That's like that would be like going to a Baptist church and saying, I don't think Jesus really literally rose from the dead. It's like, no. Yeah, so but that's them. You know, they're fundamentalists in their approach. And when you read the Midrash, you realize that the sages who came up with this stuff were way more literate than that. You know, they were, at least, they were having fun. They were having fun with the text. They weren't trying to say, no, really, this is exactly how it happened. They were more along the lines of no, wait, I've got it. This is how it happened. You know, like we were talking about last week with the sages in the study halls one-upping each other. Yeah. So I never, when you hear a Midrash, you hear it's in the Midrash, or, you know, tradition says, or anything, like any preface like that, you should never be thinking, is that literally true? Did that really happen? That's not the point. It's really not the point. Instead, it's more like a, you know, it's more like illustrations. That would be like saying, you know, parables, for example, a mashal, a parable, is a form of Midrash. As we read the Midrash, we will encounter parable after parable after parable. But imagine going to Jesus and saying, did that guy on the road really, did a priest really literally walk by him, you know, or, you know, any of his parables say, did that really happen? You know, it's like, no, you're missing the whole point here. Yeah. Midrash works the same way. It is true. No, it is truth. It contains truth. It communicates truth. But it's not necessarily literally true. Just like a parable. It's a little slippery, though, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is. All right. We're going to look at pardas. Now, you don't have to remember this too much. It'll help if you do. Pardas is a word that means paradise. It's actually a Persian loan word that came into Hebrew. You can hear paradise in it. Pardes. Pardes. But here in Jewish terminology, we're using it as an acronym. You know an acronym? Okay, so we have consonants in Jewish acronyms. You only work with the consonants. You don't have to worry about the vowels. It's kind of nice. So we have a P, an R, a D, and an S, right? Pardes. This corresponds to four words that are considered levels of interpretation, all right? Not necessarily ascending or descending levels, but just different levels of interpretation, okay? Peshat, the P is for Peshat. Peshat means simple or literal. So that's the literal meaning of the text. What you got in the Bible is the Peshat. Okay. However, when we get to studying Rashi, we'll learn that the Peshat can include a lot of Midrash. From Rashi's point of view, anyway. All right. That's the Peshat. But Peshat, properly, means literally the text. Okay? Remez. Remez is the next letter. R is for Remez, right? Remez means allusion or hint. An allusion from one text to another text. Employing things like verbal analogies and other intertextual links to juxtapose otherwise unrelated texts. That's how I would say it. I'll give you an example to make it clearer for you. Someone comes up to our master and says, "What is the greatest commandment?" And he says, "Oh, that's an easy one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength." He says, "Do you know what the second greatest commandment is?" The guy's like, "No, what is it?" He says, "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." And he's like, "Oh, you got me there." You see, there was a remez there and you didn't even notice. Both commandments start with the Hebrew word va'ahavta. Yeah? How cool is that? There's only three commandments in the whole Torah that start with va'ahavta. You shall love the Lord your God. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And you shall love the stranger as yourself, which explains the parable of the Good Samaritan when the sage says, "And who is my neighbor?" And he tells him the story about a stranger. Anyway, that's a remez that just happened. The sages do this all the time. The apostles do this all the time. The whole book of Hebrews is like coked up on doing this. And you know, this is apostolic interpretation. You could think of it as, you know, Stamfar called it scripture defining scripture, using scripture to define scripture. It's more than that. It's way more complicated than that, but that's a good, simple way to remember it. Okay, next level up, drash. Drash is the interpretation, and you can hear the word midrash in there. In fact, when the sages would give a teaching, it was called a drasha, something searched out, midrash. Drash is the interpretation, but here's the thing. It's a non-literal interpretation of the text that's been derived from these methods. And then finally, if that wasn't enough, sowed. Sowed is the deep, secret, mystery meaning of the text. Sowed is what everybody always wants to learn. Sowed is like the thing that everyone's interested in. So, for example, I'll give you an example of... Well, you know, Paul gives us enough examples here. He's always pulling this out. He's like, "Behold, I tell you a mystery. You know, and that's like, he is. That's he's using that language. I'll tell you the deep meaning of the text. Like when he, in Ephesians 5, he says, this is a great sowed. This is a great mystery. He's talking about Adam and Eve and you know, Adam is the head of his wife and this whole story. And, Adam loves, has love. And then he says, this is a great mystery, but I'm talking, and here's the great mystery. I'm talking about Christ and the church. You know, it's like, so he's like, takes it and flips it and makes it the whole thing symbolic of something else, right? Well, you can get there through remez and drash. Then you arrive at the sowed level, the deep level. So we do that all the time. We talk about, for example, we say Isaac and his sacrifice, you know, this. What's the sowed of the sacrifice of Isaac teaches us about Yeshua and his sacrifice, the sacrifice of the only begotten son. Or we talk about Joseph, whose identity is concealed from his brothers. What's the sowed? So we do this all the time in the Messianic movement. We're always moving around on this level as we interface the text. All right. I mentioned parables. You find a lot of parables in the Midrash. The Hebrew word for a parable is mashal. Same word for proverb. That gets confusing. In fact, the book of Proverbs is called Mishle, parables. So a mashal is a parable. And the Midrash has to use parables a lot in order to illustrate the incredibly obscure points it's trying to make. And this is really important for us in New Testament studies because these parables offer us parallels. Isn't that funny? I said parables and parallels in the same sentence. Yeah. Because parable means parallel. You know, it's it's a simile. These parables offer us parallels to the parables of Yeshua. Now I said it three times.